Welcome to On Mission, a podcast from the Catholic Apostles' Center. Today we're joined by Father Frank, Chris, Kate, and Tyler, and we're talking about the Synod on Young People, the Faith, and Vocational Discernment.
When talking about young adults in aggregate, and I'm the only one sitting here who's not a young adult, and qualifies or enough, we're going that 18 to 39 with the group, and here we're talking about a group here that is for the Synod's purposes 16 to 29, and World Youth Days are really designed more for young adults. But we have this whole, whenever we hear this word youth, it means teen.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at World Youth Day, the whole idea of sending someone halfway around the world, of course it's designed for a young adult, and then all of a sudden you have these high schoolers out there, and you're just kind of, it is confusing, and I think I think that's where we end up with some of the problems, or the not problems, but the conversations around young adult ministry in the United States. It's, where does it begin? Where does it end? Where does it start? Where does youth ministry end and young adult ministry begin? Mm-hmm. When you are in high school and you love youth ministry, and as a high schooler, right? You're all about it, and you're going to all these things, and you want to be involved. And then you move into the young adult phase of your life, which, for the purposes of the conversation, let's say college, and it's confusing. You don't know. It's not the same. It's totally different. But yet you have some of these instances where you're trying to keep what you did in high school going, and maybe mm-hmm. it's not appropriate. For mm-hmm. that, for the level of where you are as a person, in your educational experience, in your life experience, it's just you're moving on, and ministry has not caught up.
And not to even mention post college, because that's another huge,
right? A 28-year-old married person. What do we do?
or even wow, just you know the recent
speaking
grad.
From some experience there.
Oh no. We can't possibly let them on the parish counts.
Even
edit that out.
No, I think that's true.
But it's intimidating. You look, you go to you're sitting in the parish, and I've chosen. I'm here. I have made my decision. This is what we're going to do. And what's the next step? How do I become my mother? How do I be as involved as my parents are in their church? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know how because that's just what it was. You growing up, that's what mom did. That's
not,
what dad
and not
did.
Everybody went to college.
Sure, exactly.
Either. They went to the military. They were in trade school. They were or they just started working and got married young. But there seemed to be more of an ability to flow into the life of that just by showing up. Oftentimes it was just by showing up. Like, if you kept showing up enough,
I recognize that person. We shouldn't get them to do something.
Well, you hope.
Right. And so it's like I'm almost kind of, you're almost waiting, right? You keep showing up, and I'm here every weekend. Hello. Like, should I wear a sign that says I'm interested in helping you do something? And, and that invitation may not happen. And so is it? So then it's up to you. Do you feel responsible to reach out, to engage, or do you close off? And now it's, what do we do? And then you're just in the pew, hopefully, right? You continue to go and go to Mass and experience the parish life, but are you really fully engaged?
And I think people want to participate. I think young adults want to belong. And that's something
Absolutely.
That the church is recognizing. And so, I think that's one of the reasons why Pope Francis called this it's the 15th General Assembly, because he says it's time for the church to examine herself on how she can lead young people to recognize and accept the call to the fullness of life and love, and to ask young people to help her in identifying the most effective way to announce the good news today. So young people have a huge role in the church. The church is recognizing this, and Pope Francis is calling the church to reflect on that and how young adults can participate in announcing the good news.
And with the General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops, you have two different types of them. You have ordinary ones, and you have extraordinary ones. And I think you were, Tyler, doing some a little bit of quick math on some of the numbers that have happened.
Yeah, I was just curious. We've only been really hearing about the synods that have occurred, the General Assemblies that have occurred under Pope Francis.
Yeah, I don't think they existed under any of the other popes. Am I right?
No, that's actually false, and I had no idea because apparently Twitter wasn't around in 1970, so you didn't get live updates when Pope Paul VI had three of his own General Assemblies for the Synod of Bishops, and JP II had seven, and Pope Benedict XVI had two. So Pope Francis is now calling his third, so that makes a total of 15 General Assemblies of the Bishops, and this is the first one on young people. This is the first time that young people are having a voice, are having their perspectives heard by the entire church, by the hierarchy, the hierarchical body of the church. This is a fantastic moment.
Let me ask a question here. Now, comparing church history to this, is this synod on the same level as, let's say, Vatican II or Council of Trent? Or, you know, where are we in the impact? Obviously, you know, today is not then, and the impact of things today is different than the impact of things that happened when we didn't have social media and television and radio, et cetera. But, you know, what is the real impact that this synod and what comes of it will have, could have, on the church as a whole?
Well, you're not talking about, unlike a council, you can have authoritative teaching that can come out of that council, and does, usually. Some of it is dogmatic. For example, Lumen Gentium is a dogmatic constitution on the church. It's official teaching of the church. And then others might be more pastoral, like Gaudium et Spes that came out of on the church in the modern world, like how do we engage the modern world, or decrees that come out like the Apostle of the Laity, and how, but those have affected then
right.
how the church has functioned ever since, and it's changed canon law, and it's changed liturgy, and it's changed everything.
So just because it doesn't have that,
no, it's but it's still a continuation of right. of that. It was born out of that experience of the Second Vatican Council,
mm-hmm.
the synod. This whole synodal method was born out of that experience of bishops coming together reflecting. The interesting thing about this one in particular is the amount of consultation that's going on, that's been surveys and online opportunities.
The amount of voices
that are coming into it. I mean, even just this whole pre-synod meeting that occurred in March that had 300 represent plus about 15,000 people in six different Facebook groups. I mean, that's pretty amazing consultation that's going on before they even come up with a document called what they call Instrumentum Laboris, the right. working document.
Synod hasn't actually happened yet.
No, October. Right? October. It's October.
In Rome.
You know, it's like, calm down, folks. We're still working here.
Just going back a little bit, I think it'll be helpful to say, what is a synod? I mean, a lot of us weren't even using this terminology just a few years ago.
Didn't even know how to spell it.
S-I-N.
So a synod is an assembly of bishops from around the world who assist the Holy Father by providing counsel on important questions facing the church in a manner that preserves the church's teaching and strengthens her internal discipline. So they're called by the Holy Father with the help of bishops and the whole church to provide counsel on an important question. And so that changes, you know, with the times. And so I think it's a true sign of the times that right now the question we're considering is, what role do young people play in the church, and how can we help them embrace their vocation? How can we help them feel a sense of belonging in the church, and how can we help them become disciples and apostles who understand their identity in the church, which is a huge one, rather than just sitting in the pews.
All right, I'm going to do some pushback here. You've been using the there. At the outset here, I said I'm the only one who doesn't qualify on the young adult end. What about you? I mean, we're in terms of activity and so forth, you're all coming at this from different perspectives, but are very active Catholics. So how'd that happen?
Podcasts, obviously. Specifically Catholic Apostolate Center podcast. But in all seriousness, I think it for me in particular, I think that, and the question is, how are we?
Well, I think how do people become?
Right.
And I think one's own story with that, usually there's somebody there. I mean, or people there or church there in some way.
I think for me, and we touched on this earlier, for me in particular, almost 23 years of Catholic education from preschool to graduate studies. At differing points in time, yes, I may have been educated in the Catholic tradition, but where was my level of Catholicity or my faith life? You know, it was on a scale, right? High school was very, I don't know, it was, you're a teenager, and I was an only child, and so I just kind of did what I pleased, and my parents didn't really push back. But when I came to college and I found a community of people, men and women, that not only encouraged me to, or encouraged us as a community to engage in our faith life, but to put it out there as being something of importance and something that you can weave into your everyday life. And I think that's when, for me, I turn the corner and it's okay. So my faith life is different from yours or different from someone else's, and that's okay. And to me, that was a huge impact, just because there isn't one way to do it, and there's no, you know, there, well, maybe there's a wrong way to do it, but there isn't, you know, in reality, there is, it is what you make of it. And having that choice and that ability to be flexible within the confines spoke to me, and I think that's what engages me today to show others it is what you want it to be. There is no, you know,
singular way,
rubric,
yeah,
to mm-hmm. engage your faith. Mm-hmm. And that is what keeps me on mission to do things like this podcast and to work with the Catholic Apostle Center and other groups and go to church and talk to my friends about what bishop is moving where and reading blogs. And it's because that's how I want to engage in it, and that's okay. And I think, you know, it's a long-winded answer to that question.
I think it's a very, very honest answer in terms of where people are. But
I went to Catholic school from kindergarten to eighth grade and then went to a non-denominational high school. And my faith was always, like you said, Chris, it was like it hadn't
manifested.
Yeah, in every aspect of my life. It was like I went to church on Sunday, I checked the box, and I'm Catholic. And I remember my high school friend said, "Wow, you're a cool Catholic." Because I probably wasn't living any of my Catholic faith in the day-to-day life. I had that sticker on, you know, I had that title just because I went to church, but I didn't have any other sort of obligations to live my faith out in my day-to-day life. And I had never, unfortunately, really seen that done in a joyful way. My parents were the best examples of living out the faith. But apart from that, I wasn't really seeing that in my community or in other families or in my school, you know. And so I wasn't having anything truly reinforce that Catholic identity. And I didn't even know what it could look like. When I went to a Catholic college out in Northern California, but again, and I went to church on Sunday. I wouldn't say I ever left the church. I never struggled with believing in God. That was always just very natural to me. I didn't understand a lot of the church teachings. I hadn't really been well or formally catechized. And it wasn't until actually I studied abroad in Spain that I kind of made my faith my own. I studied abroad in this small town in western Spain called Salamanca. And it's cobblestone streets. You're walking to class. There's a huge cathedral that I would look out from my classroom window. It's just this beautiful and rich history. And it wasn't even that I was going to church more or that someone evangelized me. I just experienced beauty, and I was truly grateful for that. So I just started being grateful to God and to my parents and to my family for giving me that opportunity. And I came back and I just kind of started calling my mom more and my dad and just telling them, thank you. Thank you for providing me with this experience. Thank you for allowing me to, you know, attend college and supporting me through this. My mom actually thought I was depressed because I was calling so much. I've usually been a pretty independent person. And so she's like, what's wrong? Kate keeps calling to talk. But, you know, I said, Mom, I just have all this gratitude and I kind of don't know what to do with it. And she was like, well, why don't you, you know, continue to thank God and just spend a few minutes every morning calling upon the Holy Spirit and saying thank you. And so I did. I would spend 5 to 10 minutes just telling the Lord, you know, thank you for this experience. Thank you for that. And it started off with thank you for my family or thank you for my education. But it developed into something a lot deeper. You know, thank you for this very small experience that happened this day. You know, thank you for this gift. And that's when I just, the rest just kind of started to come naturally. I started going to Mass more. I started going to confession more. And my friends, most of whom are not Catholic, especially at my university, just realized that there was this joy that I hadn't had before and this peace. And, you know, I couldn't necessarily explain it, but I did want to share it. And so that was a huge turning point for me. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history. I realized I needed a little bit more formal education. And so I decided to pursue a master's degree in leadership for the new evangelization at the Augustine Institute. And, you know, after graduating college, I just started asking God what his plan for my life was rather than here's my plan. So.
And I'm going to offer a third different unique perspective, which is unbelievable, the amount of perspectives that the Vatican must be getting right now, which I guess why there's so much conversation about this on social media. How do we as church respond to all these different perspectives, socioeconomic perspectives, all different types of diversity, the different age groups we started this out with? But briefly, I converted to Catholicism when I was 14. I then went to a Jesuit prep school. My family became really acquainted with our pastor who walked us through the whole faith. We became very excited and energized about the faith. I ended up going to Catholic university, which I would never have imagined prior to being 14 years old. I found a good community of friends at Catholic U. I was able to explore my intellectual questions of the faith more profoundly, more deeply. Sure, I participated in some things of college that those of us who take the faith seriously shouldn't participate in. But I eventually came back around and loved the truth. And now I work for the institutional church. and I maybe a little differently than most people. I have a strong affinity for the Latin Mass. I find that's very helpful for my own personal prayer life. And that's where I am. And we're all very different. And I just keep thinking about how overwhelmed the Vatican must be. This is kind of all outlined in the conversations, the pre-synod document, everything that is preparing for the October meeting where the bishops will actually unpack this. And we often forget we're just the United States of America. There's youth in South America, in Asia, in Africa, in Europe.
Young people,
youth and young adults. Yeah.
And it is. It's a very it's a very large question, and one that the church, I think it's fantastic that the church is reflecting on. And having done ministry with, starting out in secondary education when I was newly ordained, up through to this very moment, working with young adults at the collegiate level, and no matter what else I was doing, whatever ministry that was really my full-time thing, there was always some piece that was always around young adults, especially over the last 21 years. And seeing just this diversity just from that, and thinking exactly what you're saying, Tyler, my goodness. And then also seeing the diversity I see within my religious community with the Palatines, we're 2,354 countries. Wow. And having traveled through and been a part of in the different communities in different countries, and listening over the years to my confreres and maybe their work with young adults, with young people in general, it's the breadth. You know, the person who is in abject poverty and yet is so spiritually engaged with life, or the person who's totally spiritually poor and has everything, but there's no joy. Then and how to address that, you know, in terms of church. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the because this is the world that young people are growing up in. One of the things I think that was interesting for me about the pre-synod document was a little line that said, even in some of the countries where there wasn't basic needs, there was internet
mm-hmm.
and technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're able to see and go from in a way that other parts of the world and life in other parts of the world are seemingly so, in a way that they couldn't ever before, you know, when you were in the village, in remote wherever. Or people from nations that have a great deal who can see what's going on in other parts of the world as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely live in a globalized world, in a multicultural, diverse world, one that is just able to communicate, like you said, in a way that's unprecedented. And I think the diversity invites us to dialogue and to encounter. It can be a challenge. But what's also, you know, I think we can't overlook is that there still are certain kind of universal things that unite us. So, you know, there's this search for meaning, you know, this search of identity that a lot of us have, this question of who am I, you know, what is my purpose? You know, many young adults are thinking about what do I want to do with my life? Do I want to get married? Am I called to marriage? Am I called to religious life, the priesthood? What kind of occupation will I have, or what do I want to do? You know, and so I think that the diversity can be overwhelming, but it can be helpful to look at these sort of universal questions of the human heart that a lot of us are asking and a lot of us are thinking about.
When I think of in reading some of the things that we prepared before the podcast and just thinking about the upcoming synod and life in general, one of the things that they talk about in their document is the sense of community. And I think that that is something that young adults, young people in particular, are looking for, regardless almost of where they are in their faith journey, whether it is very little or you know, there it's manifested greatly. I think one of the things that the folks that put this together touch on is the need for the church to provide a sense of community, because that is what young people are looking for. And I that stood out to me, because I agree. I think that that is what someone my age, quite or a little older, a little younger, is looking for when you are in this position where you have all these questions about what am I going to do? Who am I? What is my purpose? What should I, you know, what is my end goal in life? You look to the community for that. And if you don't have one, or if you can't find one to be comfortable in, there's something lacking there. And I think it is an opportunity for the church, for our faith, to be that community.
Yeah, and in that same breath, young people also stated they want authentic witnesses, authentic people to draw people into that community, men and women who vibrantly express their faith and relationship with Jesus while also encouraging others. I think this is why saints like Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, Mother Teresa, St. John Paul II were so popular, because they were just so inviting, and their example of the Christian life was just so stark. The church needs more of that. We need more young people on fire with the faith who would bring other people in. And I think part of the synod is helping young people be heard. Young people want to be heard. We want to be recognized so that we can go out and be that.
And that's
example.
A really good point that you touched on, Tyler, is that young people want to be heard. It's not, we don't expect you to agree with us. We do not expect, wholesale change just mm-hmm. because we're here and mm-hmm. you need to adapt. But the idea of you are listening and you are taking our suggestions or our comments into consideration is such a huge thing that young people today value, whether that's in the church, in the workforce, at school. I mean, you see it right now, right? We are in a moment of people want to be heard. And again, and when you combat that with, well, you're not going to change anything, why are you speaking up? It's because we want to speak. It's because we want to be heard. We want to have our opinions considered. And again, it's even if nothing changes, we want to know that we matter. What we have to say does make a difference. And I can't help but think of when I was saying earlier, you're sitting in the pew and you have opinions about how things should, you know, some suggestions that maybe you haven't thought of, or how to, you know, ideas that maybe you may disagree with, but at least you've never thought of it, and you're bringing it to the table. And
I see this in the workforce all the time. We're at a unique age, especially with the development of technology, where we have such a vast knowledge about how some of these things operate. And in many cases, we can make things more efficient, or we can be more creative with the resources at our disposal. And I think the same applies in the church. Young people just want that unique opinion, skill set, perspective in this new technological modern age to be able to navigate.
That's what this priest synod meeting of 300 delegates from around the world, from a variety of different perspectives coming in there. I don't think everybody was even Catholic. I think they did also some non-Catholics, mm-hmm. non-Christian, you know, it's kind of to really kind of mix it up and get the perspective of as much of a diverse perspective of young people, plus 15,000 and six different Facebook groups, that it was different. Is it going to be perfect? No, I think. But I think that the even the final document, which was, again, something that will get brought into the mix of all the consultation that's been done all around the world by bishop conferences and surveys. There's a lot of surveys that are out there, including an official Vatican one that people could fill out. And that's going to really be draw together all those pieces that then help prepare the bishops for October to be able to reflect even more fully, along with theological experts and other people coming together, which is the part of that synod process where they have these theological experts, they also have then the bishops themselves, and then after that usually comes some type of what's called post-synodal apostolic exhortation. Usually there's some, it's a mouthful certainly, but usually a document that is under the name of and is, you know, and very much engaged in the development of by Pope Francis in this case, or whomever the Holy Father is. And that's been true with the majority of the synods that have happened over time.
I think the number, like, one of the things that I think of when I listen to you speak, Father, about that is that there's nothing worse than getting a bunch of old people in a room and deciding what they should do about young people. And so I think it's important and it's so critical, and I'm appreciative that this pre-synod meeting has taken place and that these surveys are taking place and that there is consultation being brought
and
in.
That the Holy Father was there.
Right.
This wasn't just a meeting in the
true.
Vatican.
Yeah.
This the Holy Father spent a fair amount of time at this meeting.
Which is unusual. Typically
which is not
unusual,
not
right?
typical. Usually he's come in, give an address.
Right.
No, he was up there similar to a synod.
Listening.
Mm-hmm. Just listening to what the delegates
unfiltered.
were. Yes. Mm. And they were invited to be pretty unfiltered.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, without, of course, being rude. I mean, people on social media sometimes could be a bit more tense, but that didn't as much make it into the into the room. But I think the people did say, at least the different interventions that I read or I saw, they were pretty candid about what the reality of life is for young people today in different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's really tragic. Some of it is very enriching, you know, like very uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it was I found it very interesting just getting bits and pieces. I can't even imagine what it'd be to be in the room there.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I don't think a lot of young adults and young people think of the Catholic Church as a place where they can truly participate and be heard and respected. I just think that that's not the general connotation. That's not the general understanding. And so I think it's just amazing that Pope Francis is really setting just such a different tone. You know, he wants the Church to accompany young people, he says, on their existential journey to maturity, so that through discernment they discover their plan for life and realize it with joy, opening up to the encounter with God and with human beings and actively participating in the edification of the Church and of society. So, wow, how much respect he has for youth and young adults, and he wants to walk with them. He wants the Church to walk with them because this is such a crucial time in a person's life. This is often when they're deciding if they want to go to college, they're deciding their education, they're deciding their occupation, if they want to get married, have a family. All these huge life changes are happening, and the Church needs to be a part of that. The Church needs to walk with us and with young people during this time and wants to, and I just think this is beautiful and such a great testament to our Holy Father's commitment.
And in the mid-19th century, just to throw it back a little bit, when St. Vincent Pallotti began his ministry, the laity was not actively involved in the mission of the Church, and it was his vision to inspire people of all walks of life to be able to fully participate more in the mission of the Church. Look how far St. Vincent's vision has come. The Synod is saturated with lay contributions in the hopes that the Church can respond more effectively to young people in today's modern world.
And he spent a lot of time working with youth and young, what we now call youth and young adults. There were young people that were in need in a variety of ways, but he also worked together with them, even as a young person himself, doing charitable works, organizing people, coming together to be able to recognize what was available. But he also did a lot of work with seminarians. And this was one of the things I thought was interesting, too, about the pre-synod meeting, because there were young religious and seminary, and there were different people of who were present there who also were bringing that kind of perspective into things where this mix, and I see this among a number of young adult Catholics who have friends, you know, who are in seminary or in religious life, but they keep up with them. They keep connected. They don't just go off and that's it. You know, goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Seminarians are people too.
Yes. And I think, but I think there is, because there's a mutual learning that goes on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That, yeah. That, I would say, I mean, sorry to interrupt, but I just, you know, it's I think I've been, my faith life has been enriched by my friends. You know, I might be an anomaly, or some of us might be an anomaly in this room that have so many friends in seminary, but that's, I think, has only been an enrichment in our lives to see these folks, these men and women who have chosen to go into, you know, religious life, that they've made that choice. And what a blessing it is to know them and to walk with them, and to, they learn from us just as much as we learn from them.
Similarly, I would say, as a fairly recent, you know, newlywed too, that it's been so mutually enriching having single friends, having married friends, having friends with kids. And I remember when I was single, studying in Denver, I would look at families and I would just wish that they would invite me to dinner sometimes, just because I yearned for family life and I wanted to get a glimpse of that, because I obviously wasn't interacting with a lot of children, with a lot of families. And you know, I think that that's something my husband and I have tried to be very intentional about, is, you know, now that we're married, now that we're having kids, not isolating ourselves just with people who share the same vocation. Really making a point to invite our friends that are single or that are still discerning their vocation, or that are hoping to get married, or just, you know, just getting married, you know, having these dialogues and having a lot of people at our table, at our dinner table, because that's how the church is enriched. And we've just really seen that. So I think that's a really great point.
So what do we do with the whole thing that you talked about, Chris, where right at the beginning, where here you are, in the pew, or worse, you present yourself and you're patted on that, oh, nice little young person, the youth. So what does church really do about that? I mean, there was a lot of talk about in that final document about mentoring, in the pre-synod document, there was about accompaniment. What does that look like when done well? I don't mean heavy-handed. But done well.
I would hope it's an invitation. On our end, you know, as in the pew, you need to keep going and you need to keep being a presence, and you can't let.
So perseverance.
Yeah, exactly. You can't let the closed doors or the non-invitation push you away. You need to, you know, I think it's important to have the grit and the perseverance to just keep going. But on the other side, for the folks that are not necessarily young adults, I think that they have to be challenged to not just to seek out a token young adult, but to be welcoming and to be welcoming to all the youth and the young adults in their parish or their organizations, that we are not the future of the church, we are the church. And I think that is a huge something that needs to be understood, right? It's and in many Catholic organizations, you know, I'll just say it, you know, the Knights of Columbus maybe being one of them, right? As a knight, I hear it all the time. You know, the knights are getting older and et cetera. We need to recruit young people, and that's absolutely true. But, you know, it's just the idea of the knights, you know, young people are not the future of the knights or the future of the church or the future of X organization. They can be leaders now, and not everyone can, you know, is called to be a leader. But I think the folks on the other side of the pew, whether that be the priest or the parish minister or the parish secretary or the folks that are organizing the different groups, they need to be welcoming. They need to know that young people are invited to join them and to encourage them to come, not just on their youth night or their young adult activity, but come to the Holy Name Society or the Rosarians, or come to this prayer group, or come and serve with us in homeless ministry, or help us maintain the parish, clean up the grounds, or join the Knights of Columbus. It's not on youth night, but every night.
Mm-hmm. And I think youth can create coalitions to start some initiatives like that. If there's something like that not going on in the parish, maybe get some friends or talk to some adults that are open to it, or maybe even the pastor, if you can approach him and say, I have this really great idea. What do you think? It might not work, but I'm excited. I'm passionate about this. I have a buddy, too, who's be willing to try it out with me. Things like the perseverance is key. The energy is key. The faithfulness is key.
And how about young adults, though, in terms of people who are now coming? They're young professionals coming into the parish and so forth. What do you think are some of the ways that to engage in that way?
I think, you know,
Chris had some.
I think enrolling in a parish, too, and making that a commitment of becoming a parishioner and really trying as much as you can to set roots somewhere. I know that's hard for a lot of young people because
commitment is difficult.
our this time of life is a lot more transient, you know. Maybe we're working here for a year and then moving. Maybe we want to go back home. Maybe we want to do a year of volunteer work. I mean, it's just, it's less stable. And so I think a lot of people hesitate to set roots down somewhere. But I would say just try to bloom where you're planted. And I do think there is an important aspect of taking initiative as well, not just waiting for someone to approach me and ask what my special gifts and talents are, but saying, here I am, how can I help? Here's what I'm good at, here are my strengths. And, you know, for us, that means, you know, I've started a marriage group with my husband where we meet with couples every other week who are newlyweds, you know, hosting Bible studies. Just, it doesn't always have to be this grandiose, you know, I'm going to change the church, I'm going to change the parish. You know, how can we take the resources that are available to us in our state of life and make some type of change? How can we evangelize where we are? I think people sometimes get a little caught up in, you know, I have to create this grand idea and have all the details and have all the resources. Or they're fearful and say, who am I to do anything? I don't have a theology degree. I didn't go to Catholic school. I don't work for the church. And so let's leave that to the professionals. And so I think a lot of young people, there's this discrepancy. Some feel like they're not being invited and want to be. And then others don't even know they're supposed to be given a seat at the table.
It's going to be an interesting conversation over these next several months, and especially when the Synod, I'm sure we're going to have to come up with another podcast or more related to this. But certainly we have a lot of resources as Catholic Apostolate Center. And if people would just go to CatholicApostolateCenter.org, they'll find a whole section on the Synod, on young people, the faith, and vocational discernment. And we thank everybody for listening to this podcast.
Share with your friends. If you enjoyed the podcast, don't be afraid to share it with your friend, young and old. You can listen to them on our website, as Father said, or you can subscribe on all the platforms.